Another law enforcement officer gunned down in the line of duty. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. A sheriff's deputy was killed last night in Vancouver, Washington, according to officials in Clark County who say three suspects are being sought. It's unclear what led to the confrontation. A serious spike in new COVID-19 cases in the U.S. Johns Hopkins University says nearly 119,000 new infections were tallied yesterday. That's the highest level since February. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor at the White House, says this could continue for some time because of the level of unvaccinated Americans.
There will be hospitalizations, there will be deaths, and every death and every hospitalization, particularly every death, is a tragic, avoidable phenomenon.
Starting Monday in St. Louis County, Missouri, masks will be mandated indoors regardless of vaccination status. The COVID-19 deaths at New York nursing homes during the early days of the pandemic won't be the focus of a federal civil rights investigation despite the demands of several Republican lawmakers.
The Department of Justice is dropping an investigation of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo into whether he violated the civil rights of New York nursing home residents with his controversial admission policy that required medically stable COVID-19 patients discharged from hospitals to be admitted to assisted living facilities.
Fox's Mike Emanuel, an investigation by federal prosecutors into how the Cuomo administration handled the COVID crisis is ongoing. Another ugly beltway battle could be looming. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says Congress needs to raise the debt limit or suspend it by August 2nd to keep the government from defaulting on its obligations. America's listening to Fox News. A brazen shooting in Washington, D.C. has the police chief frustrated and furious.
Video of people eating in restaurants in the Logan Circle area of D.C. went viral as diners rushed for cover at the sound of gunshots. Two men were hit and taken to hospitals. The chief of police, Robert Conti, spoke out angrily at this and other instances of violent crime, saying between closed courts and certain laws, criminals are back out on the streets within days.
Enough is enough. In the way that we're going and the things that we're trying to do, we want to help people. Yes, we should. But you cannot coddle violent criminals. You cannot.
Saying they may not want a job or need services, but do need to be off the streets. While recreational marijuana is legal in D.C., Conti said illegal marijuana pop-ups are heavily linked to violent crime. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
The rising crime in Chicago is fueling friction between the police department and Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, who's been accused of being soft on crime. City Council member Anthony Napolitano believes the city should handle some of the low-level criminal cases instead of the state.
You could still put the state charge on, and our state's attorney can drop it like she usually does, but we could settle our side, our municipal hearings. We could drop the fine on these offenders up to $10,000, and those funds will be going back into our state obligations on our pension funds.
In a statement, Fox accused Napolitano of fanning the flames of racial tension. Hefty fines could be imposed against four companies following an accident at a poultry processing plant in Georgia that killed six people.
Foundation Food Group, Packers Sanitation Services, Messer and FS Group all being cited. On January 28th, a freezer line went bad, sending a cloud of liquid nitrogen into a room below the floor level of the rest of the plant.
Fox's John Saucier, the workers tried to escape, but some of the plant's exits were blocked. Pam Puso, Fox News.
Around the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland, currently there are no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. Heads up in Bethesda on 270 southbound, there is an accident right near Old Georgetown Road exit 1. In Dumfries on 95 northbound, that's jammed up between Dumfries Road and the Dale Boulevard exit. Also on the northbound side of 95 in Lorton, you're going to find that jammed up between Lorton exit 163 and the Franconia Springfield Parkway exit 169. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny skies on this Saturday, starting off with a few isolated showers across the region. I think they will be very isolated in nature over the next few hours through the mid-morning hours as we head towards the afternoon, becoming partly cloudy. Better chances for showers and storms along the Blue Ridge and points west later on today. As we head overnight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, lows in the 70s. For your Sunday, hot and humid. High temperatures back into the lower 90s. Do have the chance for a few isolated showers and storms, mainly after 4 o'clock. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton and our producer this morning. And we have a lot to talk about, including the shooting, 14th and Rigg Streets, Northwest in D.C. That's where that strip of restaurants is on 14th Street, revitalized area of downtown D.C. And I'm sure you heard about it. 20 shots rang out Thursday night as diners were there, and we'll get into some of the details of that this morning. Also, COVID-19 and the Delta variant, a 65% jump in infections across the U.S. We're going to talk to Dr. Bob Lahida, and we've had him on before. He is a nationally recognized expert, and we're going to talk with him about that Delta variant, about vaccines in general, and he's got some very enlightening statistics and information for us this morning. Also, John Gizzi is on the way. Of course, he is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, and he was over at the White House this week, was around for some of the questions about the Hunter Biden art sales. Fascinating conversation. Also, there's a race coming up in Texas. A congressional seat will be decided on Tuesday. And what's as interesting as the congressional candidates is the supporters behind the congressional candidates. In other words, there are two nationally renowned politicians on opposite sides of the fence when it comes to a Republican election. We always have an interesting conversation with Mr. Gizzi as the White House correspondent. And also this morning, Jennifer Harper will be joining us. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Talk about the Olympics and what the expectations are for ratings this go around. The Summer Olympics officially underway. The opening ceremonies last night after a year-long delay. The First Lady is there, and we'll get more on the First Lady's trip from Jennifer Harper this morning. Interesting poll numbers from Jennifer about the American flag and how people actually feel about it. Interesting numbers also on the performance of Republican governors and their states in contrast to the Democrats. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us later on as well, and we always have a good conversation with Tony. We'll get into the announcement by Russia of some new hypersonic weapons and the general direction of the Russian military, how that contrasts with the Pentagon and the U.S. military these days. And we're going to talk more about the situation between Dr. Fauci and, you may have seen the controversy with Rand Paul this week, back and forth on the Hill in the hearing between Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci about the gain of function research back at that lab in Wuhan, China. And we're also going to get a look at the oversight in general from the Congress with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. And we'll be talking with KT McFarland about some of the key foreign policy issues that are facing the Biden administration. And that's all coming up this morning on the Saturday Morning Update. As you may have heard, there was the shooting outside of a restaurant in D.C., 14th and Rigg Streets, and that's not too far from the White House. What I guess is made this such a big story is the video that came from the people in the restaurant, and you saw people basically ducking for cover in a downtown D.C. restaurant as 20 shots rang out in the background. The shooting was out on the street. Perpetrators took off in a vehicle and, to our knowledge, have not been arrested at this time. And it got national attention. Now, there are people shot and killed every day in D.C., including a six-year-old, Nia Courtney, who was killed last weekend. Didn't quite get the national attention of this shooting. Why? Well, we didn't have video of that shooting. So when there's video and video of people scrambling around a restaurant, it's going to make national news. It goes viral. So anyway, it has become a big deal, and it is a big deal, whether it's a shooting in the street, whether it's a shooting outside of Nationals Park, whether it's the homicides in Chicago, it's a big deal. And what's interesting is, depending on your perspective as a politician, The question is, well, what's the cause? What do we do about it? How do we attack the problem? Now, we have highly compensated officials in many different arenas, from the federal government to local government. We have mayors around the country, and in the large cities, the mayors are Democrats, and they view it through a different lens, typically. They blame it on the guns, as Mayor Bowser will blame it on the gun here. As you listen to what she has to say, just keep in mind, guns do not pull their own triggers.
What we saw tonight, and unfortunately what we saw over the last several days, is an illegal firearm brazenly used on D.C. streets.
Didn't mention the perpetrators, right? Didn't mention the thugs that fired the guns. No, it's the guns' fault. At some point, the mayors are going to get it. One person in D.C. that does get it is the chief of police. He is Chief Robert Conti III. He was at the same press conference the other night that Mayor Bowser was at, and here's what Chief Conti had to say.
I'm mad as hell about this, and I hope y'all are too. We want to help people. Yes, we should. You cannot coddle violent criminals. They might not want a job. They might not. They might not need services. What they may require is to be off of our streets because they're making it unsafe for us. Why is it that a guy who murdered somebody is out in community after having been arrested two or three months prior with a firearm? What do we think he was going to do?
Mayor Bowser was right there. Heard him say that, but do you think it sinks in? No. He hit the nail on the head. If you let violent criminals out after you apprehend them the first time, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to go out and do it again. It's not that difficult, but they don't get it. President Biden and his attack on guns, not perpetrators. Go after the perpetrators. Prosecute the perpetrators. They want to stop illegal gun sales. There are enough illegal guns on the streets right now to probably arm every thug in the country for the next 10 years. And you're not going to get them all off the street. You can stop the sales moving forward, but what about all the guns out there now? You have to go after the criminals. Yeah, get the guns off the street. Great. Great idea. But get the criminals off the street first. How hard is it? 6:18, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, right now on 95 northbound, the traffic is jammed up in Dumfries between Dumfries Road and Dale Boulevard, exit 156. Also on the northbound side of 95, it's jammed up in Lorton between the Lorton exit, exit 163, and the Franconia-Springfield Parkway, exit 169. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. And in Bethesda on 270 southbound, there is a crash right near Old Georgetown Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny on this Saturday, starting off with a couple of showers across the region. I think they will really be limited, very isolated in nature as we head towards the afternoon. Partly cloudy to partly sunny, high temperatures in the upper 80s. Could have a few isolated showers and storms, mainly west of town, closer to the mountains. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, lows back around 70 degrees. As we head towards your Sunday, hot and humid, highs in the lower 90s under partly cloudy skies. Afternoon showers and storms, think best chance after 4 o'clock. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Currently in the nation's capital, 66 degrees on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and transparency is always a word that politicians love to use. How the new Biden administration was going to be the transparent administration. Jen Psaki was asked a question about the White House staff and vaccinations. This is how it went down in the White House briefing room.
Do you have a count, or can you offer any confirmation to us on the percentage of employees who are vaccinated?
I'm not going to provide that.
Are you trying to hide something?
No, but what is the? Why do you need to have that information?
Transparency.
Duh. Remember when President Biden made this commitment?
I will always level with you. Use Franklin Roosevelt's example. I'll shoot you, give it straight from the shoulder. Straight from the shoulder, what I know and what I don't know.
Okay, well, that's the president shooting straight from the shoulder, but the White House press secretary certainly doesn't want to. Speaking of transparency, a lot of question marks now about the Hunter Biden art sales. The question is, Hunter Biden, now an artist, after he was a genius board member for Burisma, now he's a world-renowned artist. His paintings expected to command up to $500,000. Wow. So no influence connection there. Nobody's going to buy the art to have any influence on Hunter Biden and ultimately, theoretically, the president, as that chain usually is expected to play out. No, that's not what they're expecting at all. Well, here's how White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki explained it off yesterday.
He's not going to have any conversations related to the selling of art. That will be left to the gallerist. So he's not going to discuss anything related to the selling of art. And I would reiterate that the gallerist will be the only person who handles transactions or conversations in that vein and will reject any offer that is out of the ordinary. We won't know who the buyers are. Hunter Biden won't know who the buyers are. So there's no scenario where they could provide influence.
There's no scenario where they could provide influence. So whoever purchases one of these Hunter Biden pieces of art is going to, what, not tell anybody? It's going to be top secret? It won't be signed? Of course it's going to come out at some point. We don't think it's going to come out? I mean, really? Give me a break. Now, Walter Schaub is a key figure here because he was an ethics expert in the Obama/Biden administration, okay? He was the director of the Office of Government Ethics under President Barack Obama. He has called for the art sales to be canceled or for the names of buyers to be disclosed. He recently tweeted, Hunter Biden should cancel this art sale because he knows the prices are based on his dad's job. Shame on the President of the United States if he doesn't ask Hunter to stop. If that fails, he should ask that the names of the buyers be released and pledge to notify us if any buyer ever meets with administration officials. Well, that's common sense. That makes sense. And he is the former director of the Office of Government Ethics in the Obama-Biden administration. He's not a right-wing conservative congressman. No, the former director of the Office of Government Ethics. I mean, it's laughable, except that it's not laughable because none of this is funny. It's 6:24. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Plenty to cover, and we'll be chatting with Jennifer Harper coming up real soon.
Breaking news and the inside story 24/7 on Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
6:27. It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Ballard. Good to have you with us. And we all know that the relief payments have been out for people who've been out of work throughout the COVID-19 crisis, and those payments have continued, and there is a worker shortage. People are not racing to get back to work, and we're hearing all over the country of these shortages, and employers, after having taken a hit, of course, in revenue, are now expected by the administration to pay higher wages to entice people to come back to work instead of sitting around and collecting checks and do nothing. Well, the Secretary of Commerce was asked about this on Thursday, and here's how that went down.
How would you assess, Madam Secretary, the worker shortage that many employers are finding? They're having difficulty getting back up, especially in some of the hospitality and tourist areas.
It is acute. There is every business I talk to says that they need to find talent. So I don't know if I would call it a shortage per se. I would say there's a skills gap. What I hear all the time is from companies, we are ready to hire, but people need to have the skills. And so that's what we have to get at the business of. And by the way, we need to make sure that women and people of color and people in rural areas have those digital skills so they can get those good jobs.
The skills gap is in the administration, in the cabinet members. That's where the skills gap is. People were working a year and a half ago. They went out of work. They didn't lose their skills. There's no particular incentive to go back to work if you can sit home and collect checks. Do they not understand? The skills gap. It's not the workers. It's the geniuses in Washington. It's 6:29. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall. WMAL. Where Washington comes to talk.
In the news at 6:30, Nancy Pelosi and Liz Cheney have joined forces to investigate the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Pelosi tapping Cheney to join a committee that will hold its first hearing next week. Speaker Pelosi rejected two Republican nominees for that committee. Out-of-state crews heading to Montana to battle a blaze that injured five firefighters as the West continues to struggle with a series of fires that have ravaged rural lands and destroyed homes across the West. Authorities say progress is being made on the nation's largest blaze, that is the Bootleg Fire in Oregon, but less than half of it has been contained. Thousands of homes remained threatened in Oregon. President Biden back on the campaign trail. He spoke last night before nearly 3,000 people in support of Terry McAuliffe. Biden motorcaded across the Potomac River to back Terry McAuliffe. Of course, he's the former governor of Virginia looking for a second term. 6:32, it's time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland. Currently, on the inner loop and outer loop, there aren't any delays around the Beltway, so you should be traveling at the posted speed limit. On 270 in Montgomery County, heads up, southbound, there is a crash near Old Georgetown Road. Into Virginia, on 95, on the northbound side, first it's jammed up in Dumfries between Dumfries Road and Dale City Boulevard exit. And also northbound on 95, you're going to find it jammed up between the Lorton exit 163 and the Franconia Springfield Parkway exit 169. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny on this Saturday, starting off with a couple of showers across the region. I think they will really be limited, very isolated in nature. As we head towards the afternoon, partly cloudy to partly sunny, high temperatures in the upper 80s. Could have a few isolated showers and storms, mainly west of town, closer to the mountains. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, lows back around 70 degrees. As we head towards your Sunday, hot and humid, highs in the lower 90s under partly cloudy skies. Afternoon showers and storms, think the best chance after 4 o'clock. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:33 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. This is the Saturday morning update. Good to have you with us this weekend. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Let's start off a little differently this morning. We don't talk about the Olympics much. Now, we saw what happened with Major League Baseball in the All-Star Game, dreadful ratings. What's your projection looking like for the Olympics? You've got some interesting poll numbers.
We have to wonder, Rick, whether the combination of politics and sports has yielded something not very good right now. And also, for the Olympics itself, the fears of COVID-19 and global discord and a whole lot of other things, I think they may be taking a toll on the Olympics. In fact, the media coverage has not been very cordial, all that cordial. For example, a couple of headlines. Tokyo's Olympics have become the anger games. That came from the New Yorker. Do the Tokyo Olympics still matter? That came from the New York Times. And Olympics are on guard as a favorite target of Russian hackers. That came from NBC News. But you put all that together and could yield a very large disinterest among some viewers. And, yes, there is a poll out there asking people, hey, are you going to watch the Olympics or not? And not surprisingly, the folks who are least interested happen to be Republicans. So let's go to the numbers very quickly. This is coming from the Economist YouGov poll conducted July 1720. And here we go. 40% of U.S. adults do not plan to watch any of the Summer Olympic Games. That includes 47% of Republicans, 41% of independents, and 31% of Democrats agree with that. 31% overall will watch a few events. That includes 32% of Republicans. Do the math there, and you find out that 79%, that's 8 out of 10 Republicans, are really not going to be watching much of the games. And we'll just skip down on the numbers. It's a little too early in the morning for all this. But 6%, only 6% of Americans say they will watch events every day. And that includes 5% of Republicans, 6% of independents, and 10% of Democrats. So it's kind of a cultural moment here and something to bear watching.
In a story somewhat related to the Olympics, we saw a lot of controversy recently over the American flag and some displays of athletes about the American flag. And you have some poll numbers there, too.
Yes, here we go with our numbers again. But these are really worthwhile, indicating that Old Glory is still the big winner in America. Most Americans are just not buying into the United States flag being a negative symbol. I'll just put it that way. Here we go. Voters continue to admire the U.S. flag, with 82% saying that they either have pride or patriotism, which describes their sentiments on how they feel towards the flag. This is coming from a Trafalgar Group poll that was released this week, and respondents across the board agreed with that. It found that 94% of Republicans, 82% of independents, and even 70% of Democrats also cited pride or patriotism as their dominant feelings towards the flag. And according to Mark Meckler, now he is president of the Convention of States Action. This is a nonprofit, and they were in partnership with the Trafalgar Group poll here. And he says, as for those few who said they feel shame, indifference, or suspicion when thinking about our flag, I'd like to remind them that the right to express this view was paid for by the blood of men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice to protect this symbol of freedom around the world. So again, the poll is revealing that the predominant feelings here is pride and patriotism, and this was a poll of 1,094 registered U.S. voters conducted July 12th through 13th.
Well, the First Lady is at the Olympics.
Yes, she is, and we can only describe Jill Biden as a busy, busy, busy First Lady. And she's definitely been on the move. She departed Washington on Wednesday and will be returning this evening, Saturday night, and she's been on a pretty complicated diplomatic mission. So let's look at where she has been. On Wednesday, she went to Alaska and visited with military families, had meetings with medical folks up in Anchorage. Then she went over to Japan. She had dinner with a prime minister, and she had a formal greeting with the emperor, all of this taking place in Tokyo. And, yes, she attended the Tokyo Olympics opening ceremony Friday night. And then she's going to head for Hawaii and is going to be home, if she is not already home, as we talk. But anyway, this is like a five-day mission, and I was curious about that because she seems to be kind of the busiest person in the whole White House. And here's something I found from Associated Press. They say Jill Biden's pace of travel is on par with the president's. And they did an analysis of how many journeys Mrs. Biden has taken. And as of July the 3rd, she had already taken 20 significant official solo trips this year. So possibly it could appear that she is a first lady with a different kind of mission right now.
President made some comments this week indicating in his mind that because there were fewer immigrants who were in custody at the southern border, that we're making progress. seems to me he just let them all out and has flown them all over the country so they can pick up more Democratic votes in the next election or two. But other than that, there is a sheriff at the border who is asking some questions about the White House.
You know, Rick, it's always helpful to look at some of the numbers that are actually coming out of the border areas. And certainly the Border Patrol this week reported that there had been the most action in 21 years on the southern border. In June, agents down there recorded 178,416 arrests. And this was defying Homeland Security predictions and so forth and so on. And I always take a look really at the local stuff. On about a recent Friday, Rick, Customs and Borders Patrol agents seized $1.9 million worth of illegal drugs, $414,000 in cash hidden in a car trunk, apprehended 299 illegal immigrants inside several stash houses. This is actually coming from the Border Patrol, and this is just on one Friday afternoon. So let's go to somebody who truly is a boots-on-the-ground person down there. That would be Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels. Now, he is down there in Arizona, and he is now declaring that the border is, quote, the largest crime scene in America. This is what he told Fox News. And he's saying now that there were 200,000 getaway migrants were seen on federal cameras monitoring the section of his state alone recently. He says, every day on the southwest border, 1,100 getaways are coming into our country every day. We have no idea who they are. They're camouflaged. They're smuggled by the cartels and released in communities. That is a public safety national security threat. Again, this is coming from Sheriff Mark Daniels of Cochise County. He says, I think every elected leader should pay a political price on this issue. The fact is, we take an oath of office, and that safeguard the quality of life that Americans expect and to protect all Americans, and we're not doing that right now on the southwest border. It's the largest crime scene. I've said that numerous times. So your border update for today.
Well, the governor in Texas has been making some headlines, Greg Abbott, and he has been working on building his own wall since the feds won't do it. And Republican governors may be bailing out some other states as well, I understand.
Yeah, well, let's kind of frame this as Republican governors to the rescue. They kind of deserve a round of applause for their efforts and for their support of the traditional American work ethic. The Republican National Committee this week parsed some interesting numbers, they say. Newly released data from the U.S. Labor Department confirms that Republican governors are leading the way in getting Americans back to work. This is according to, again, the Republican National Committee. They say jobs are rising and unemployment is lower in states with Republican governors and legislators. 17 of the top 20 states which have recovered jobs since the pandemic hit are led by Republican governors, and 18 of the top 20 states have Republican-controlled legislators, and this is the GOP saying this. The top 8 states for jobs recovered are all led by Republicans. 2 Republican-led states, Idaho and Utah, have more jobs than when the pandemic hit. Another 21 Republican-led states have recovered at least 2/3 of their lost jobs, and only 10 Democrat run states have recovered at least 2/3 of their jobs lost. And also, the CNBC report that was also released this week of America's most business-friendly states, and they found that 13 of the top 20 are led by Republican governors. So by the numbers, they're outdoing their Democratic counterparts.
Well, those are the governors. How about a senator, or at least somebody that wants to be one? J.D. Vance, very successful author. Will he be as successful in a Senate race?
Well, he is being followed very closely because he's heavily campaigning in his state of Ohio, where he's running for senator. He hopes to take over the seat that is being vacated by Rob Portman, who is retiring. And if you all don't know, he's the best-selling author of Hillbilly Elegy. And he's kind of earning a title as a very aggressive candidate right now. And I kind of caught up with some coverage of him when he was just speaking in a bar, like a sports bar in Mansfield, Ohio. And this is what he said, and he was also looking at the problem of a secure border between the United States and Mexico. He said the drug cartels that are there are some of the most vicious people in the world. We're the greatest country in the world, and we're letting a bunch of criminal gangs use our southern border as their criminal base of operations. This is ridiculous. And again, he's saying this at a sports bar in Mansfield, Ohio. In addition to the border, this is according to the Mansfield News Journal, Vance used his time to rail against major technology companies, saying they should be broken up and taxed, and he argued that America has become too reliant on countries such as China for critical goods and services, citing car parts and pharmaceutical ingredients. So Mr. Vance is getting very specific there, and here's what he told his audience. We need fighters who are actually going to fight for rebuilding this country, to punish the companies and the elites who are destroying it, and that forces our country to have a reckoning around what's going on and how to fix the real problems that exist in this country. So pretty good for a best-selling author and now a very aggressive candidate for the United States Senate.
It never ceases to amaze me how the mainstream media outlets continue to do anti-Trump media stories. I mean, there's at least one a day. And you've got maybe a different take on where you could catch a story on Donald Trump or maybe even something better?
Yeah, I think so. If you have fatigue with all the coverage, I mean, it's just endless, and it's way more than one a day. It's more like 20 stories a day in the Trump field there in the mainstream media most of the time. They just can't resist it. Oh, my gosh. But if you're tired of all that, I have a reminder here from American Conservative Union Chairman Matt Schlapp. And they recently hosted CPAC Texas in Dallas. It was a really big hoop-de-doo. And he reminds everybody that President Trump made a very rousing speech during that organization. And he wants everyone to know that this speech is still available to view in full online through the organization's website. If you're curious, if you want to look at Mr. Trump's speech and revisit the kind of speech that he offered over his 4 years in office, you can just go to conservative.org. And it's right there on the landing page. You can tap into it and give a listen. Again, that's conservative.org. And we thank Mr. Schlapp for giving us that reminder.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much and have a lovely weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot, Rick, and hope everybody has a good weekend.
Yes, we do. It is 6:48. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Bob Lahida. He's been with us before, and you're hearing a lot about the Delta variant, and what is it, what does it mean, and what is the threat? That's next. First, though, we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. On 270 in Bethesda, heads up, there is a crash near Old Georgetown Road, exit 1. Between the two Beltways, on the BW Parkway and 95, you're not going to find any delays northbound or southbound. On 95 in Virginia, on the northbound side, it's jammed up between Dumfries Road and Dale Boulevard. Also northbound in Virginia, 95, you're going to find that slow between the Lorton exit and the Franconia Springfield Parkway exit, exit 169. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny on this Saturday, starting off with a couple of showers across the region. I think they will really be limited, very isolated in nature. As we head towards the afternoon, partly cloudy to partly sunny, high temperatures in the upper 80s. Could have a few isolated showers and storms, mainly west of town, closer to the mountains. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, warm and muggy, lows back around 70 degrees. As we head towards your Sunday, hot and humid, highs in the lower 90s under partly cloudy skies. Afternoon showers and storms, think the best chance after 4 o'clock. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:49 on this Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Back in May, we thought we were over the hump when it came to COVID-19. The masks began to come off. Life began to get back to normal. The Beltway started to get crowded again. But cases of COVID-19 are on the rise. There is a new variant that is extremely contagious. And we're joined by Dr. Bob Lajita. He is the director of St. Joseph's Institute for Autoimmune and Rheumatic Diseases, professor of medicine at the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, and clinical professor of medicine at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. Dr. Lajita, great to have you back with us.
Thank you. Great to be back, Rick.
And sorry it's under these circumstances. Help us to understand the Delta variant, why we're having this resurgence, and the seriousness of what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, the Delta variant is another variant of the coronavirus. And you know they've all been given Greek letters. So the first virus back in early 2020 was the Alpha. We've given that the name Alpha variant. We call it a variant. And then along the way, there have been all of these various variants from South Africa and Britain, et cetera. And now we have the Delta variant, which we believe is out of India. It's extremely infective, about 300 times more infective than the Alpha variant, and it's easily transmitted. It, you know, the coronavirus is a respiratory transmission. So if you're in a room with 20 people and one person has got the sneezes and coughs, all 20 people are going to become positive, especially if you're close together. So that's important to understand. Now, I call this a pandemic of the non-vaccinated because these are the people who are becoming infected and winding up in our intensive care unit. And there's no age limit. You have to figure that, I think I have the numbers here, that a variety that people over the age of 65, about 90% of them are immunized. 70% of people in other parts of the country are immunized. But there's that one-third of the country that refuses, either because they're not confident of the vaccine, they're complacent, and they really don't care, or it's not convenient for them. And we have all sorts of excuses, I hear. So the Delta variant, to come back to that, causes a more severe disease. Now, you can be masked and still be infected. You can be vaccinated and still be infected. That's called a breakthrough infection. And it's not so rare. The only difference is if you're immunized, you're not going to wind up in the hospital. We don't think you are anyhow. And we haven't seen any. 99% of the people in the intensive care unit who are on ventilators are non-vaccinated. And these are people which, if they recover and don't die, would say, if I had known it was this bad, if I had known it was this bad, can you imagine hearing that over and over? I would have gotten my vaccination and I wouldn't have taken the chance. And, you know, oftentimes, I would say in the vast majority of times, they don't get the chance to save us. They're dead. And the body count is going up now, and that's unfortunate because, Rick, the big problem is the fall and the winter months when we're all clustered together in our apartments, in our restaurants, and we're trying to keep warm. That's when this virus is going to have a heyday. And we have a Lambda variant out of Peru. I don't even know what that does yet. I don't know the infectivity indices or how it infects people, but undoubtedly there will be additional variants coming along that really mutate upwards. And I say upwards because they become more infective and are more deadly. Now, there are viral mutations that go downwards, meaning that these viruses then die out, the ones that are mutated to death. The virus is not alive. Remember, it infects your cells. The more cells and the more people it has to infect, the more likely there will be more variants. And hence the reason these other countries where I think the vaccine rate, for example, in Japan is about 17%, in Brazil it's 5%, and in Australia it's 5%. These countries, you know, in contradistinction to us, where we have about 68% vaccination in our country, these countries are hotbeds of infectivity.
For someone that's listening that may have a perception of the chances of getting the virus, a perception that was formed maybe over the last year, but not incorporating this information you've just given us about the Delta variant.
Yes, and it's extremely sticky to the ACE2 receptor in your mouth, your lungs, your nose. It is very, very adherent, and it really, I think from the reports that I've read, it's based on the stereochemical structure of the spike protein, which means that the immune system, efficient as it is, can be overrun by this virus not to a great degree, but if you're vaccinated, you're still going to get sick, perhaps, but you're not going to wind up in the hospital. You can still, if you're vaccinated, transmit the virus to other people. And if they're not vaccinated, then that's trouble for them, but not for you. So hence the need for the vaccine. I just don't understand why people don't see the light and say, I just don't want to be vaccinated. I don't want to wear a mask. I just will take my chances. That's what I've heard. I'll take my chances. Well, you know what? It's a pretty big chance. It's like Russian roulette.
So there's a social debate now and a political debate about whether people who have been vaccinated should actually wear masks. And from what you're saying about the Delta variant, what is a non-political, common sense answer to the question, if you're vaccinated, do you recommend wearing a mask when you're out in public?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you should wear a mask when you're out and about if you're vaccinated. You can go to a restaurant. You can go to church. You can do whatever. I go to the gym. I have to tell you that it's fine. I feel totally protected. However, if I was not vaccinated, I would definitely wear a mask. I would be extremely careful. I would wash my hands, and in the gym, I wouldn't be next to somebody who's yelling and screaming and coughing and sweating. Same thing with yoga mats, and you're in the yoga class, and you know, you're cheek to jowl in these places. So you just, the people who are not vaccinated are on the honor system. They are there not wearing masks, and they're just ripe to be infected.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Bob Lahida coming up about 7:15 this morning. There's a lot more to talk about when it comes to the Delta variant and the real uptick in COVID-19 infections across the country. So that's coming up in the next hour. It is 6:57. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And we'll be talking with Barbara Britt. She's got the news coming up next at 7 o'clock.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.